and reached for a slice. "Your yearbook looks stunning, Emmy," he said, after I'd wolfed down a slice. He gave me a weary smile. "I can tell how hard you worked on it." I shrugged, still not ready to let him off the hook, and grabbed a second slice of pizza. "So what happened to you today?" I grumbled. He stayed silent for a long moment. "What did she want this time?" I asked. But I already knew. Every 6 months or so, my mother would contact him because she missed him, only to disappear again. She never mentioned me. Not once. When I asked again, Dad finally took out his phone. He held it out to me without saying anything. I peered down at it. My mother had sent him a photo of her hand. On her finger was a large diamond ring, cut into a brilliant square. I looked back up at my father's tired eyes. She was so beautiful. But beauty can make people forgive a thousand cruelties. We sat for a while without saying a word. Then I touched Dad's hand quietly with my own. He looked down, away from me, ashamed to meet my eyes. "I'm sorry, Emmy," he said in a small voice. "I'm so sorry. I'm a fool." I just shook my head. And when I wrapped my arms around his neck, he held me tight, trying to piece back together the lives she'd left behind. I stir from my dream, my hands clenched into fists. The time on my phone reads 3:34 a.m., and the TV in my room is still on, cycling through the news. I lie still in the silence. It takes a long time before I finally relax my hands and let myself sink back against the bed. I watch the news without paying much attention to it. The reporter has already started discussing the runner-up wild cards who will replace me and Ren. "Brenner Lions, level 72, a wild card from Scotland who will now represent the Phoenix Riders as their new architect. And Jackie Nguyen, a fighter..." The reporter's voice fades into indecipherable noise as my thoughts turn to my teammates. What are they thinking now? The public explanation for Ren leaving was that he had been caught gambling. The explanation for me was that I'd received death threats for news about my relationship with Hideo going public. Hideo. His declaration replays in my mind as surely and sharply as if I had recorded it as a memory. My eyes wander to the box Roshan and Hammy had given me before they left, and I reach for it again, opening it to run my fingers against the broken ornament shards and scraps of canvas. My heart rate still feels elevated, my chest still pained. I punch my fist down against the bed. Zero is going to get away with everything. My thoughts run through all that we'd managed to uncover so far. Coordinates of all the major cities where Warcross tournaments were going to be held. Disrupted patches inside each Warcross world in the championships. A file that had self-destructed, an assassination attempt. And a soundtrack Ren had created, potentially to be played during the final Warcross game. So many pieces. I repeat them in my head, until the news cycle on the TV has finished and starts all over again. Then, a new message appears in my view. My thoughts scatter for a moment, and I glance at the note to read it. How did this message get through? It's not from someone I've approved. In fact, there's no tag on it at all. I hesitate, and then I reach out to tap it.
"For you, from one hunter to another."
That's all it says. I let out a breath I didn't know I was holding. From another hunter? Somehow, one of the other bounty hunters had found a way to hack through my own shields. They know who I am. My head jerks up to the security cam in one corner of my room's ceiling,
wondering if they are hacking it to watch me. And then my attention goes back to the message. It has an accept invite question mark button attached to it. I sit up straighter. Then, with trembling fingers, I decide to accept. A virtual figure materializes a few feet away, his hands and arms hidden behind arm guards and gloves. His blue eyes are stunningly bright. A jolt hits me as I see his face. It's Tremaine. He raises an eyebrow when he sees my shocked expression. "Hello, Peach," he says, a sneer spreading on his face. "What an honor." I start, then stutter to a halt. "You're one of Hideo's other hunters?" He offers me a mock bow.
"I looked just as surprised when I found out about you."
"How did you get a message through my shields?"
"You're not the only one with a few tricks up your sleeve."
"Why are you contacting me? Why are you showing your face?"
"Relax, Mika. I found something that you might be interested in."
Before I can ask him what it is, he reaches up and makes a swiping motion with his hand. A file materializes between us, hovering in the air like a glowing blue cube.
"You have the other piece of this file," he says.
I frown at the glowing cube for a second before I realize that I'm looking at another piece of Proj_Ice_HT 1.0. The same file that I grabbed from Ren before Hideo's attempted assassination. "How do I know you're not just trying to give me a virus?"
He actually looks offended at my question.
"You don't think I could find a subtler way of doing that? I'm trying to help you, you idiot."
I scowl, my teeth clenching. "Why? We're supposed to be rivals." He smiles again, touches two fingers casually to his brow, and salutes me.
"Not if Hideo already dropped both of us from the job. I've received a compensation payment already, so there's not much incentive for me to stay on this hunt. I have bigger, higher jobs to concentrate on right now."
He tilts his head at me.
"But I bet you're still keen on protecting Hideo, aren't you?"
I blush, annoyed. He nods at the hovering file.
"Thought I might as well pass along what I've collected. A gift from one hunter to another. That way, if you find Zero, you'll know who's responsible for your win."
I shake my head, still unwilling to touch the file. "I don't trust you."
"And I don't like you either. But we don't have time for that right now, do we?"
We eye each other for another beat before I finally reach out and accept the file. For a moment, I expect something in my view to go horribly wrong, like I've just downloaded a virus. But nothing happens. The file seems clean. Maybe he's being genuine after all. I look back at Tremaine. "You helped Roshan get Ash out of our building." At that, his expression wavers. I wonder if his change of heart had anything to do with that moment. If he, as another hunter, also understands what had really happened. Tremaine shrugs and turns away.
"Just tell Roshan I stopped by," he mutters.
Before I can say anything else to him, he vanishes, leaving me alone again in the room, staring numbly at the spot where his virtual form had just been. How is this possible? I think back to the opening ceremony party when I'd confronted him and Max Martin, when he'd sneered at me. His data had looked perfectly normal, disguised to be indistinguishable from an average player's. I hadn't even seen any shields installed to protect his info. He had probably set up an entire, elaborate system of false info to throw off anyone who tried to get to him. He'd likely been studying me, too. He'd been right in front of me, and I'd missed him entirely. "You tricky bastard," I think. I squint at the file, trying to make sense of it. It's clearly garbled, just like the piece that I have. My eyes dart back to the contents in my box. My Christmas ornament and Dad's painting had been destroyed, but Just because they were destroyed doesn't mean some traces of them, however small and broken, weren't left behind. And if there are enough pieces, you can see what the original object was supposed to be. I bring up a main menu and tap my fingers rapidly against my thighs. A scrolling list appears. I sift through it backward until I finally reach the day of our first Warcross tournament. Then I pause. Proj_ice_HT1.0. I tap on it. Sure enough, an error message pops up, telling me that the file no longer exists. But this time, I run a hack that forces the file to open regardless. The hospital room around me disappears, and I am immersed in a field of mangled ghost code. It is all nonsense, partially corrupted, just like the file Tremaine had sent. I pull up what he sent me, and then I run both files together, splicing them into one. Suddenly, there is just enough info for the file to open. It is a memory. I am standing in someone else's recorded memory, inside a massive, dimly lit space. A train station? Wherever it is, it's a real physical location. Cobwebs adorn the air between archways, while thin shafts of light slice through the darkness to dot the floor below. People are gathered here in a loose circle, but they remain silent, their faces hidden in shadows. Others appear as virtual figures, as if they'd logged in from distant places to be here. "The track's done," someone says. I startle, realizing that the words are coming from the person I'm watching this through. It's Ren's voice. This is one of Ren's memories. One of the figures in the darkness nods so slightly that I barely notice it.
"Hooked up,"
he says. His words come out as a whisper, but from the way the tunnel's archways curve at the ceiling, I can hear his words as clearly as if he stood right beside me. My point of view, Ren, nods.
"It'll play the instant the championship finals world loads. Show me."
The authority in the mystery figure's voice makes me freeze. This is Zero, in real life, flesh and blood. Ren obliges. A second later, music is piping through my earphones, the familiar beat of his track. When it hits the chorus, he pauses it, then brings up a ream of glowing code for everyone to see.
"This will start the countdown on the rigged artifacts," he says.
I suck my breath in sharply. Rigged artifacts? The teams in the finals will have rigged artifacts?
Rigged to do what?
"Good,"
Zero says. He looks around the room at each person in turn. As he does, they each bring up a hovering copy of an assignment, syncing with one another and checking their progress. In my view, Ren brings up a copy of it too. My eyes widen as I read it. This is what I've been looking for. It details what Zero is going to do. During the final game, Zero is going to switch out the artifacts and replace them with rigged ones, corrupted ones, ones containing a virus on them that will sweep through to every active Neuralink user. It's why Zero had been gathering so much data inside each of the Warcross worlds, why he was assigning locations to his followers. They're making sure the virus will trigger in each location, that no security shields can stop them. My breaths come short and quick now, my eyes darting frantically across the text. What will the virus do? Destroy the Neuralink? What does he want from destroying it? What will it do to people who are logged on during the final tournament? The final tournament. It's no coincidence that he chose this time to unleash a virus. The maximum number of Neuralink users will be online around the world at the height of this final game. Why would Zero, someone clearly skilled in technology, want to destroy this technology? In the memory, Ren speaks up again.
"One more you should check,"
he's saying.
Imika-chan. There's a wild card.
Zero turns to him.
You found something?
She's connected to Hideo outside of the tournament in more ways than one. She's sniffing out your trail.
If she finds something significant and alerts him to it, he'll find a way to stop all this.
A chill sweeps through me at his words. Ren had found me first. He had alerted Zero to me, possibly even at the same time that I'd alerted Hideo to him.
I'll look into her.
Zero's voice is calm.
We'll be watching their comings and goings, and if she tries to alert him, I will know. We can always make this a double assassination.
The memory ends. It fades around me until I'm back in my hospital room. I sit there with my heart pounding, head whirling, feeling more alone than ever. A double assassination. This meeting must have happened before the first attempt on Hideo's life. I'd shared information with him, and in return, they'd tried to kill him. Then, Zero had appeared to me, warning me to stay out of it, offering for me to join him instead. The house bombing. Zero has no qualms about coming after me, too. Instinctively, I reached to connect with Hideo. I should send all of this to him right now, tell him everything about Zero's planned virus, the rigged artifacts. But if I contact him, Zero might know. And if he sees Hideo do something about the final game to stop this plan, then Zero will definitely know that I've been communicating with Hideo. He might change their plan. And then, everything I've already discovered will be useless. I have to stop this without tipping off Zero, without Hideo's involvement. And that means I have to find my way into the final game and stop Zero from planting those rigged artifacts. I let out a long, shaky breath. Maybe I am in over my head. And a small, scared part of my mind reminds me that if I just stop right now, just leave like Hideo had insisted I do, Zero might return my memories to me. But I can't stand the thought of leaving. If I do, what will happen? My gaze now returns to the box sitting at my side. All I can concentrate on are the shattered remains of my precious things. All I can linger on is the thought of Zero, hidden behind his insufferable mask, frustratingly opaque, telling me what to do. My temper stirs, and my fists tighten. Hideo wants me off the official games and the hunt. Zero has warned me to stay away. But I've never been good at following instructions. I'm a bounty hunter. And if my bounty's still out there somewhere, I have to finish this. I get out of bed, walk to the corner of the room underneath the security cam, reach up, and yank its wires out. It goes dark. Then I call Roshan and Hammy. When they answer, my voice comes out as a hush. "Ready to hear the truth?" I say.
"Ready," Roshan replies.
"Good. Because I could really use some help." Chapter 28. Common sense would tell me that this is absolutely the worst possible time to log back into the dark world. I almost died in an explosion. I'm no longer on the job, and a hacker and his crew are after me, turning me from the hunter into the bounty, ready to take me out the instant I show some sign of continuing on their trail. There might even be assassins after me by now. I'm probably on the assassination lottery list in the pirate's den. But I'm out of time. Now my virtual boots slosh through puddles in the Silk Road's potholes as I pass street after street of neon red signs, all listing the names and info of people who have been exposed in the dark world. There is more traffic in this section of the Silk Road, a jumble of anonymous users crowding into alleys and in front of doorways, creating the sense of a night market. Wayward strings of light bulbs hang overhead, beyond which I can see the mirrored, upside-down version of the city hanging down toward us from the sky. I glance warily at the stalls I pass. Some sell virtual Warcross items laid neatly out on tables. Everything from gold rings to glittering capes, leather boots and platinum armor, healing elixirs and treasure chests. Others sell illegal real-world items. One offers outlawed guns and bullets, promising overnight delivery for cases of 30 and up. Another sells drugs. The stall is set up as professionally as any online shopping site, where you add grams of cocaine and meth to your shopping cart, get the packages delivered to your doorstep 2 days later, and leave customer reviews for the vendor without ever endangering your identity. A third stall hawks diet pills not approved by health departments, while another offers discounts to watch a famous Dark World Girls R-rated live stream. I grimace and look away. There are stalls for stolen artwork, poached ivory, currency exchange between virtual notes and bitcoins and Japanese yen, and, of course, gambling on both Warcross and Dark Cross games. I see bets being cast right now for the final tournament, and the amounts are astronomical. A number hovers over each stall, telling me how many people are currently considering purchases at that vendor. The number over the betting stall says 10,254. 10,000 people making bets at this one little gambling stall alone. I can only imagine how many bets people are casting right now in larger gambling shops, like the Pirate's Den. It's another reminder of how many people will be on the Neuralink during the final game, and it makes me move faster. I stop at a currency stall to exchange a huge chunk of my money for notes. Even now, converting this much money physically hurts. What I wouldn't have given just a few months ago to hang on to this much for the rest of my life. But I trade it anyway, looking on as the numbers in my view change from one type to another. Then I continue on. Finally, I reach the intersection of the Silk Road and Big Top Alley. When I look down the alley, I see the vendor I'm looking for. The Emerald Emporium, home to expensive, valuable, and very, very rare power-ups. The outside looks like an enormous circus tent, painted with broad black and gold stripes that glitter under the strings of lights. The flaps of the tent's entrance curve to both sides, revealing a yawning pitch-black hole into which a velvet carpet extends. An immediate, instinctive fear hits the back of my stomach at the sight. Dad and I had once gone hiking in the woods at midnight, and when we had to walk through the black space of a gnarled tree trunk, I'd nearly had a panic attack. Everything in darkness looks like fragments of monsters. The entrance to this circus triggers the same sort of fear, stepping into the black unknown, beyond which is something dangerous. In fact, this intimidating entrance is all part of the vendor's security shell to deter window shoppers. If you're too scared to enter, then you're probably too scared to make purchases. A pair of twins on stilts stand on either side of the entrance. They lean down toward me as I approach, their faces painted white and their eyes completely black. "Password," they say in unison, their frowns identical. At the same time, a transparent, hovering box appears in the center of my vision. I type in the password for today. A string of 35 garbled letters, numbers, and symbols. The twins consider for a moment, and then move aside, silently holding out their long arms for me to enter the emporium. I take a deep breath and step forward. Inside is completely black. I continue walking, counting my steps out carefully. When I finish taking 10 steps, I stop and turn to my right. I take 8 more. Stop. Turn left. 15 steps. I continue walking in a long, elaborate combination like this until I finally take 20 steps forward and stop completely. For users who don't know how to get past this second security shell, they'll get trapped entirely in the darkness, It'll then take them weeks to reclaim their lost avatar and account. I reach out and knock. To my relief, a rap, rap, rap sounds out as I do so, as if I were knocking on wood. A gate slides up, and I enter the enormous belly of a circus, the space lit up with hundreds of dangling bulbs. Shelves and pedestals are everywhere, displaying glass jars inside which are power-ups of all kinds. Scarlet gems and white marbles, rainbow-hued balls of fuzz and blue-striped cubes, black and white checkered spheres, and clear soap-like bubbles. Some of these power-ups have only been seen once in games, never to be offered again, while others are prototypes, still in development at Hanka Games, but yet somehow now in the hands of hackers who are selling them here. Over each one hovers its name in gold letters, along with its starting bid price. Sudden death. 46,550 notes. Alien attack. 150,000 notes. Clusters of anonymous avatars gather in front of the rare ones, chattering excitedly. Security bots glide around the floor, looking like ladies with mechanical jaws and long-nosed masks and black parasols. I study their movements. There is always a pattern to the way they move, however randomly. A shopping cart icon floats in my view now, as well as a field that I can type an amount into. I look around, admiring each of the glass jars on display, before I finally find one on a pedestal, inside which is a marble that looks like a frozen crystal ball, its surface adorned with beautiful feathers of frost. Team Freeze. 201,000 notes. This will, according to the accompanying description above it, immobilize the entire enemy team for 5 full seconds. The people gathered around this glass jar all have auction paddles, and I realize that an auction is happening for it right now. I join in, accepting a paddle from a nearby security bot lady. There are 5 bots patrolling this auction now, 2 of them drifting over from an auction that had finished moments earlier. Standing next to the glass jar is a little girl, the auctioneer, wearing a top hat nearly as tall as herself.
251,000 notes, she says at a loud, rapid clip. Do I hear 252?
Someone raises their paddle.
252! Do I hear 253?
The bidding goes on and on until it narrows down to a battle between 2 users. I watch them carefully. The highest bid is now 295,000 notes, and the second user is hesitating on raising the bid to 300,000. The little girl continues to shout out the number, waiting for someone to take it. No one does. The highest bidding avatar straightens, puffing his chest out in excitement.
No one for 300,000?
The little girl says, looking around.
295 going once? Going twice?
I raise my paddle and call out.
400.
All eyes whirl to me in shock. Murmurs ripple through the crowd. The little girl points at me and smiles.
400! She exclaims. Now we're flying. Do I hear 401?
She looks around the tent, but no one budges. The other avatar glares at me with a look of murder, but I'm careful not to stare back.
Sold!
The little girl claps in my direction. My shopping cart icon suddenly updates, the number 1 now showing, and my number of notes drops by 400,000. At the same time, the Team Freeze power-up vanishes from the glass jar on the pedestal, and the other avatars start to wander off, muttering. The losing bidder lingers, though, his eyes still on me, as are the eyes of the security bots. I thank the auctioneer, then go to look at the rest of the jars. I can still afford to spend another 1,000,000 notes, and I need to gather as much help as I can get. I join a second auction happening for a power-up that looks like a round, growling, fuzzy black creature with 2 large paws. Artifact King. If your enemy's artifact is within your line of sight, then using this power-up will automatically teleport that artifact straight into your hands, instantly winning your team the game. This time, the starting bid is 500,000 notes. Again, the auctioneer calls out the rapidly rising bids. Again, it boils down to a few active bidders. I'm one of them. The bid rises to 720,000 as I face off against one other opponent. And yet still, he won't back down. Finally, in frustration, I throw down an amount that I know is much more than the power-up is worth.
Sold for 880,
the auctioneer exclaims. 880,000 notes. I wince at the dent this makes in my funds, then check my backpack to make sure both items are properly stored. In real life, I run a scan to see if anyone is trying to break into my inventory. Rich users will sometimes come in here and clear out several big items. Other users will then lie in wait until the rich user has turned his back, then hack into his inventory and steal those power-ups. A couple of avatars have already turned their attention to me after my two purchases, and their interest makes the hairs rise on the back of my neck. I have less than 200,000 notes left, which won't buy me anything big enough to be worth using in the final game. So instead, I look around, wondering who I might be able to target in order to steal myself one more valuable power-up. Finally, I settle on an auction happening for an item that makes me light up. I've never even heard of this one before, leading me to believe it has to be a prototype or even an illegal user-created item. Play God. 751,000 notes, 14 bids. This power-up gives you the temporary power to manipulate anything and everything in a Warcross level. Perfect. The auction is almost done, having narrowed to two users. But this time I stand by as an onlooker, watching behind the security bots as the price continues to climb. Eventually, it tapers off, stuck on nearly a million notes as one of the users hesitates.
"Do I hear a million?"
the auctioneer shouts.
"An even million! No?"
He counts down. And when it looks like no one else will take it, he points out the winner.
Sold for 990.
The winning bidder is a tall man wearing a plaid coat. As he pockets the power-up and turns away, I edge my way closer without drawing the attention of the security bots. In real life, I'm typing furiously, trying to find a moment when the man is alone and vulnerable. The security bots continue their randomized rotations, some of the assets being used to guard this auction now drift off to patrol another one that has just started. At last, I see my window, a gap where two security bots have turned away and left a narrow, clear path to the man. I head toward him, increasing my pace as I draw closer. Then, right as he's about to turn around, I lunge forward and grab for his suitcase. An ordinary avatar wouldn't have nearly the strength to do such a thing. But I've built up years of code on my avatar, programming myself for just this kind of grab. So when my hand closes on his suitcase's handle, I twist hard, and the suitcase comes away in my grasp. The man's no fool, though. No one who spends a million notes on a power-up can be. Instantly, two other avatars near us whirl on me. He has hidden security of his own here. I twirl barely out of their reach before I make a beeline for the exit. If I can get back inside the black tunnel, where the security bots can't go, I can make it out of here with my items intact. That is, if I can. One of the avatars whips out a dagger and lunges, ready to tear through me. I sidestep, but the second avatar catches me by the leg and yanks me off balance. The world topples around me, and I'm suddenly staring at the room from the floor. I kick out. At the same time, I type frantically. But nothing I can do right now will increase my security beyond what it already is. There's simply no time. Around us, the security bots have noticed the scuffle and gather instantaneously near the entrance, sealing the tent in. Others rush to me,
the mechanical women's eyes flashing, their black parasols spinning like razor-sharp blades. Their hands clamp down on my arms. I kick out as the man bends down to grab the suitcase's handle. His two helpers seize my backpack. Suddenly, one of the security bots holding me slashes out at the man with the edge of her parasol. I yelp as it slices clean through his arm. They are pixels, of course, but the man still falls backward, his left hand now cut off from the rest of the space. Useless. I look at the bot in surprise, but it ignores me and attacks the other two avatars before turning on the other bots.
Go, Em!
It shouts at me. My heart leaps. It's not a bot at all. It's Roshan's voice. I scramble to my feet and hurtle toward the exit. Another bot covers my escape. It's Hammy. Then a third, Asher. Their protection throws off the attacks from the others, which don't seem ready to counterattack several of their own. I slip between two security bots that have rushed into the fray, but are still unsure how to handle the hijacked bots. Then I'm at the entrance, and the sounds of everything behind me fade away. I follow the number of steps and turns out of the entrance, and then burst through the front tent flaps to find myself deposited back in the narrow alley. The twins standing at the entrance don't pay attention to me. Hastily, I bring up a dialogue and log myself out of the dark world. Everything around me turns black, and an instant later, I'm back in my virtual personal room. I still have the suitcase. I still have my backpack. My items are here. I set to work unlocking the suitcase. I can't hang on to it for much longer without attracting more suspicion. After several attempts, the suitcase finally pops open. Inside is the Play God power-up, blue and beautiful, its swirling clouds smudging underneath my fingertips. I stare, heart pounding. I carefully stash each of my three new power-ups into my inventory, locked up behind multiple shells. Then I wait in my virtual room, sending out pings and invites every few seconds to the accounts of my teammates. For a while, no one appears. Had it locked them out of everything? Were they caught? Then Roshan materializes, followed by Hammy. Then at last, Asher. They no longer look like security bots. They've thrown off the shell now. I break into a smile. I've never worked with anyone else on a hunt before. But now, with my teammates on my side, it seems that much easier. Asher speaks first. Well? He peers at me with a raised eyebrow. I hope you got something useful after all that trouble. I nod, then bring up my inventory to show them what I have. Asher's eyes widen, while Roshan mutters a swear. Tremaine had better be telling the truth about the file he sent you, he says. Truth or not, Hammy adds, the final will be an interesting one with these in the mix. If these won't help us beat Zero, I say, then nothing will. Chapter 29. With all the scandals happening, the finale between Team Phoenix Riders and Team Andromeda is already poised to be the most widely watched game in Warcross history. The news is reporting nothing today except for footage and reels about the games, each station frantically trying to outdo the next, channels in every language and country. It feels like the entire world has paused to tune in. Across Tokyo, shops and restaurants close as if it's a national holiday. People who can't log in easily at home now crowd into internet cafes and bars, their lenses on. The city is lit up with icons, the symbols clustering in the areas where the most people have gathered. I step away from the window of my hotel room and go back to sit on the couch. I'm holed up in one of Tokyo's dozen downtowns, registered under a false name at this hotel. As far as I know, Hideo thinks I've headed back to New York. Since our conversation in the hospital, he has only sent me one message. Stay away, Amika. Please believe me. Now I stare at a transparent clock displayed near the center of my vision, counting down the time. Just a few short weeks ago,
I'd accidentally glitched myself into the opening ceremony game for this year's tournaments. Now, there are only 5 minutes until the final game starts. 5 minutes before I need to glitch myself into the game. Only this time, I'm doing it on purpose. I double-check everything, making sure I've turned on my recording function. I'm storing today's game as a new memory world in my account. If things go wrong in the game today because of Zero, at least I'll have a recording to study. That is, if his virus doesn't hit me first. Finally, words hover over my view. Warcross Championships 8, Finale. Phoenix Riders versus Andromeda. I take a deep breath. Here we go, I murmur. Then I reach out, tap the words with a finger, and the world around me goes dark. I hear the whistle of the wind before I see anything. Then, the world fades into view, and I'm standing on a ledge, looking down into a perfectly circular lake, surrounded on all sides by sheer metal walls hundreds of feet high. When I look behind me, I realize that there is nothing but open ocean on the other side of the walls. In the center of the circular lake, 10 steel bridges, none of them connected, extend out to the walls like a star. They each lead to a tall metal hangar door embedded in the wall, spaced out evenly. Security bots stand on either side of each enormous door. As I watch, power-ups materialize over the steel walls and along the edge of the lake's waters, the colorful marbles lining the bridges both over and under. I double-check the power-ups in my own inventory. All there. Let's tear through Tokyo from 0 to 60. Yeah, like we're running out of time in the city. The intro music playing all around us makes the hairs rise on the back of my neck. Ren's new track. To activate the rigged artifacts. Let's go out with a bang. Yeah, it's time to go out with a bang. It takes me a while to notice the roar of the audience's cheers thundering all around the landscape. The ever-present announcer voices come on, as excited as ever. Ladies and gentlemen, they declare, welcome to Technica. Down below, the players finally flicker into view. Each one appears standing on a bridge near the center of the lake where they do not connect. The Andromedans are unmistakable in scarlet-red suits. Their captain, Shahira, has her scarf pinned tightly back, and her team's scarlet ruby artifact hanging over her head, while their fighter, Ivo Erickson, has his hair slicked back and a scowl on. My heart sits in my throat as my gaze turns to my teammates. Their suits are blue, a stark contrast against the steel walls around them. Asher, bearing the rider's blue diamond artifact over his head. Hammy, Roshan. Then the two new additions. Jackie Nguyen to replace Ren, and my replacement, Brenner Lyons, their new architect. Ready? It's Asher, contacting me through an encrypted channel I set up for him. His message shows up as transparent white text in the bottom of my view. I nod, even though I'm not sure I am. I hope so, I reply. I bring up my inventory of precious power-ups. When I get in, pass me your artifact. Will do. Then I focus on Brenner and comb through his data. If I'm going to glitch myself into his place, I'd better make sure I can do it on my first try. What will happen today if the Phoenix Riders don't win the game? What will happen if Zero triggers his plans? The announcers are introducing the players now. I strip down Brenner's data, then make a frustrated sound. I can't glitch in until the game gets going, I say to Asher. He's not activated yet. I'll be watching, he replies. I'll warn you if I see anything. I take a deep breath and look back down at the scene. Each of the players stands at the edge of their bridge, looking down at the water below them, then glaring at one another. No one can reach the other. Everyone is separated by a good 50 feet of space in the central gap. I can see Asher's lips moving, giving each of the riders their instructions. My attention shifts to the enormous metal doors lining the inside of the circular steel wall. Red lights start to flash at the top of each door. What's kept inside? And where is Zero? My skin prickles in real life, knowing that Zero is watching this game right now. Perhaps watching it in the same way that I am, waiting to disrupt it.
And let's begin!
The announcer shouts. The invisible audience lets out a thunderous cheer. At the same time, an ear-splitting alarm goes off, echoing all across the world. It comes from the flashing red lights at the top of each of the 10 steel doors. The players whirl around. Hammy is the first to start running toward her door along her bridge. I bring myself lower for a better view until I'm hovering over the bridges. The doors shudder in unison, then begin to pull up, the sound grating with their weight. Hammy's run turns into a sprint. She shouts something back at the other riders. The Andromedans are making their way down their respective bridges too, and as the doors rise farther, I get a glimpse of what's inside. Metal legs, thick as buildings. Circular chrome joints. Steel sinews. Then, as the doors rise higher, a barrel-like chest, each one different in design, with powerful arms hanging on either side. At the top, transparent glass lining the metal heads. My jaw drops as my gaze travels up. 10 mecha robots, each waiting to be boarded. The waters in the lake and out in the open ocean churn furiously now, turning choppier as a storm approaches from the horizon, black and threatening. I double tap on the area of my view, where I can see Brenner running toward his mech. The world zooms in around me, and suddenly, I'm directly above him, looking on as he approaches the steel door. He begins to climb the ladder along the side of the robot. On the next bridge over, Hammy has reached the top of her mech and is now standing on its head. She searches for the entrance, finds it, pries something open, and hops in, disappearing from view. Seconds later, the inside of the mech's eyes light up, bathing the metal around them with a green glow. A whirring sound starts, like some kind of turbojet engine, and rises to a fever pitch. Her mech stirs to life, the joints moving as fluidly as if Hammy were the robot. It lifts one leg, then another. The bridge trembles from each step. Asher reaches his mech second. As he enters the robot, his artifact also vanishes from view. I let out a breath in disappointment. The same will probably happen with Shahira, meaning that if I want to use my Artifact King power-up to steal her artifact, I'll have to first get her out of the mech. Shahira hops into her robot, a breath behind Asher. And then Franco, the Andromedan's architect, follows suit. I look down at Brenner. He's almost there. But there's no question that he's slower than the others, having been yanked into the final tournament with no time at all to train. Even so, he wasn't chosen as a wild card for nothing. He reaches the top of his mech, hops in, and starts the robot. Its eyes power up, glowing bright blue. I bring up a grid over Brenner and his mech, and data about them pours into a green, rotating block of code over my view. I have to time this correctly. If I do it wrong, I might glitch myself into the scene outside of Brenner altogether, and I could be exposed to the entire audience. Zero would know instantly where I am and what I'm doing. And once I'm in as an actual player, I'll have to move fast. In real life, Brenner will know right away when he's no longer able to control his avatar. He'll alert the security, and they will pause the game. They'll find me and shut me out.
Shahira is moving to strike,
the announcer exclaims, and my attention whirls momentarily to where Shahira's mech is now running down the bridge toward the central gap. As she reaches the end of the bridge, her mech crouches down like a leopard, ready to spring. Then, It gives a mighty leap into the air, and blade-like wings extend from either side of it, unfurling in a magnificent display. She launches into the air with a single swoop. As she goes, she grabs a speed power-up, and in a burst of temporary power, she leaps across the gap and onto the bridge where Asher's mech now stands. The bridge shakes from her impact, and the sound reverberates across the virtual space. I type faster. I have to get into this game. As Brenner's mech steps forward, I bring up a lattice-like image of him inside it. Then, I fly down as close as I can get to his mech. I hover right in front of the robot's eyes. Through them, I can see the outline of Brenner inside. Ready, I mouth to myself. Then I type a command. For a split second, Brenner sees me hovering outside of his mech. He blinks in shock at the sight. The world rushes around me, and when I open my eyes, I am inside the cockpit of the mech. More important, I'm inside of Brenner's body, with complete control over his avatar. Hey, Captain, I say to Asher. Welcome back, he replies. And a second later, he turns to face Hammy's mech, ready to pass her our team's artifact. She's ready for him, already anticipating his move. In a few strides, she's at his side, clasping her mech's metal hand with his. A flash of light illuminates them both for an instant, and then every player is alerted that our artifact is now in Hammy's hands. She doesn't waste a second. As Shahira barrels down on Asher, Hammy reaches for me. I take her mech's hand. Another flash of light, and our artifact is now with me. The crowd roars in excitement. I bring up my deactivation hack, take a deep breath, and run it on the artifact in my hand. It takes a few seconds. For a moment, I think it won't work. Then, the artifact sparks with electricity. A ream of garbled code appears in my view. The artifact turns black. I run an analysis of it again, and smile when it doesn't respond. Deactivated. Now the countdown starts. I have only a minute or two, at most, before Brenner alerts everyone of what happened to him, and then security resets me out of the game. I don't know when or if Zero will know what I've done to our artifact, but there's no time to dwell on it now. I turn my attention to the inside of my mech. The controls inside the mech are beautifully simple, designed for each of us to understand it instantaneously. There are weapons built into the arms and shoulders, and when I move my arms and legs, the robot moves its arms and legs. I search for Shahira. She has engaged Asher in locked combat in the air over the lake, while Franco is heading toward Asher, too, in an attempt to overwhelm him. Others are turning their attention to me. I have to get Shahira out of her mech. Team freeze to disable the enemy team. Artifact King to steal Shahira's artifact, and Play God to permanently alter the landscape. I run forward with my mech along my bridge, look over at the scene, and get ready to activate my freeze power-up. To your left, Asher suddenly shouts at me. He's shifted towards you. I startle and swing my mech's head around just in time to see Evo Erickson's flying mech barreling down on me, its jaws open as if to take a bite. All I have time to do is brace for impact. He hurtles into me. Metal slams against metal as we both go tumbling off the bridge and into the lake. The impact jars me hard. For an instant, all I can see is a blur of water outside my glass view. Use the power-up, my instinct says, but I push it down. If I do it now, Shahira will fall into the water and sink, then reset on the bridge. Instead, I aim my arm directly at Evo's head. Then I slam my fist down on a launch button. A rocket fires at Evo's mech, slamming his head backward. He releases me. My mech is suddenly floating free in the water. No time to waste. I reach for my Play God power-up and activate it. The world suddenly stops, as if paused mid-frame in a movie. In my view, A transparent number now counts down the seconds I have to alter the landscape. My fingers fly. I pull myself out of the water and settle on a bridge, then yank the bridges together so that they close the gap in the center. Metal screeches as the bridges pop free from their columns. My gaze settles on where Shahira and Asher are still locked together in midair. I clap my hands together, then push them apart. Shahira's mech goes flying off Asher's, freeing him. At the same time, I bring her closer to me, forcing her mech to land on the now-connected bridge between us. All around us, the audience's gasp echoes. The announcer's voice comes on, confused.
A power-up has been activated. We're not sure where Brenner got this from, but he has used an item that has never appeared in a game since the genesis of the tournaments. We are standing by for more info.
The security knows something is wrong now. Hideo knows. And that means Zero probably knows too. The timer runs out on my power-up. The world moves again. Shahira's mech crouches, shaking its head for a moment as it tries to reorient itself. I immediately activate my second power-up. Team Freeze. Her mech freezes in its motions. All around us, the Andromedans freeze too. Through Brenner's comm, Asher's voice comes on.
Go!
He shouts. But I have no time to explain. I jump up from my seat inside my mech and grab hold of the cover over my head. I push it up. Rain lashes me, dotting my view, and I realize that the storm on the horizon has now reached us. One thing I hadn't changed during my control of the surroundings. I haul myself out of my mech. The other Phoenix Riders are circled around me, the backs of their mechs turned to protect me. I crouch on top of my mech and turn my attention to Shahira's frozen one. Through its eyes, I can see her staring back at me, eyes wide, unable to move. I hop down onto the shoulder of my mech and break into a run along its extended arm. Overhead, the announcer's voice echoes above the storm.
Brenner has broken from the pack and used a second power-up. We are trying to figure out...
They're going to stop the game at any moment now. I'm surprised they haven't stopped it already. What is Hideo doing? Just concentrate. I reach my mech's hand and take a flying leap onto Shahira's mech arm. The rain has turned the metal into a slippery slope, and I almost slide off during my landing. My arms grapple for support. I manage to scramble to my feet and continue sprinting up her arm. I climb up the side of the mech's head. As the audience breaks into a rumble of confusion and bewilderment, I yank open the hangar right as the Team Freeze runs out. I look down through the opening at Shahira, who has just unfrozen enough to turn her head up at me. Her artifact shines right overhead, scarlet red. I take out my third power-up, Artifact King. I move to activate it. But I can't. I blink, shocked. My limbs are frozen, head to toe, and I stand there with my power-up in my hand, unable to budge an inch. Below me, Shahira narrows her eyes and jumps up to pull herself out of the mech. She comes to stand in front of me. I realize through a haze that she has used a power-up on me, too, something that has rendered me frozen. I warned you, Amika, she says. And even though the words are in Shahira's voice, I know. I know that it is not her who is really talking to me. It is Zero, inhabiting her body. I struggle in vain as Shahira approaches me, her gait now having the same predatory grace as Zero's. Her ruby artifact shines brightly above her head. So close. She circles me once, just as Zero had done in the pirate's den. And then she reaches out and takes my power up.
No,
I want to shout, but I can't. Shahira holds out the power up to me as if we were clinking glasses.
Two can play at this, she says.
She turns her back and starts running toward Asher's mech.
Why isn't Hideo stopping the game?
Surely by now, everyone can see that the game has gone wrong.
as the audience roars with a cacophony of confusion, cheers, boos, and incredulous shouts, the power-up finally wears off on me. I stumble forward, gasping, then start sprinting after Shahira. Whatever happens, I can't let her use the power-up on Asher. I can't let Zero's artifacts activate.